श्री भक्ति वेदांत चिदंदी घोष
अनागशु इहा to the offenseless bhuteshu living beings yaha the person agakrit commits offense nirankushaha upstart aharta asmi I shall bring forth Bhujam, arms, sakshat, directly, amartasya, api, even one who is a demigod, saangadam, with decorations and armor. 117.15, Srimad Bhagavatam, translation, an upstart living being, who commits offenses by torturing those who are offenseless, shall be directly uprooted by me, even though he be a denizen of heaven with armor and decorations. Purport. The denizens of the heavenly kingdom are called Amara, or deathless. Due to their possessing a long span of life, far greater than that of the human beings. For a human being who only has a maximum 100-year duration of life, a span of life spreading over millions of years, is certainly considered to be deathless. For example, in the Bhagavad Gita we learn that on the Brahmaloka planet, the duration of one day is calculated to be 4,300,000 times 1,000 solar years. Similarly, in the other heavenly planets, one day is calculated to be 6 months of this planet. And the inhabitants get a lifespan of 10 million of their years. Therefore, in all higher planets, since the span of life is far greater than that of the human being, the denizens are called deathless by imagination, although actually no one within the material world is deathless. Maharaj Parikshit challenges even such denizens of heaven if they torture the offenseless. This means that the state executive head must be as strong as Maharaj Parikshit so that he may be determined to punish the strongest offenders. It should be the principle of a state executive head that the offender of the codes of God is always punished. Om Jnana Timanandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshuru Militam Yena Tasmai Shigurabhena. So what is the modern day trend to get rid of the punishment? It's like there's a big move now to abolish capital punishment, you see. We must go easy on the offenders because actually it's not really their fault, it's just their, you know, the environment they grew up in is really to blame. So we don't really want to punish them anymore. But actually the real thing is the people who make the laws themselves are criminals. So therefore they want to go easy on the criminals because they themselves are criminals. That's the reality. The fact is that capital punishment is enjoined in the laws, the Manu Samhita, the laws of Manu, because it's actually beneficial. The person who commits a murder, what is the karma for murdering someone? You have to be killed. You see, that's the karma. So if you undergo capital punishment, then you get karmic relief. It's like a little child who does something naughty and he's going, this cloud of guilt is taking his happiness away. When will I get caught? When will I get caught? And finally he's caught and punished, then there's relief actually. Now I've done my tapa for my offense and now it's over and now I can just be happy again. My feeling of guilt is relieved because I got punished. You may remember when you were a little child, that may have happened to you. So that is a natural psychology. If I have committed some horrible crime and I haven't gotten my punishment yet, then I'm living in a constant fear. When will that punishment come? So So it's not actually you're not actually being kind to a murderer by letting him sit in the prison for his whole life and die natural death, because then he has to get that punishment in his next lifetime. That punishment must come by the laws of karma. So he has to spend a whole life with this cloud of guilt and anxiety over his head, knowing that he deserves to be killed, but not getting it over with, not facing the music, and, you know, quickly and get it over with. But he has to live in that hanging over him, when it will come, when it will come, when it will come, and finally in his next lifetime he gets it. So it's actually a foolish thing to abolish capital punishment, because then you create, it's expensive. First of all, you have to maintain all the prisoners. It's so expensive to maintain a prisoner. The prison's just filling up, and then when you go easy on the criminals, then more criminals will come out. Well, no problem, I can get out of it. You can get out on parole in a few years, be out on the streets again as a professional criminal. Actually, in the jails, they learn how to become better criminals. The prison system is a very good networking opportunity for criminals. Just like computer programmers will get together and have conferences and seminars to learn how to perfect their computer programming art. So within the prison institution, this is what they do. They network with each other and learn how to become better, more expert criminals, actually. There's something wrong with our whole penal system, actually. We're not actually solving it. Of course, again, we're coming to the crime issue. As we discussed yesterday, that Prabhupada emphasized here in Chicago, that the actual system is to follow the laws of Manu, at the same time introduce Krishna consciousness. That will solve the problems. An interesting point here is that Prabhupada goes to great length actually to explain the term Amara in regards to the demigods. Just see how important it is to have the purports of the realized devotee. Because otherwise we would think, well, the Bhagavatam says that the demigods are deathless, so I could just become a demigod and that would be as good as going back to Godhead. You see how easy it would be without the version of the realized acharyas to help us understand what is the meaning of these different words. Because it literally states here in the Bhagavatam that the denizens of heaven are deathless, amara. So without these purports of the realized acharyas, you'd just be sitting here in the dark. You won't know what's going on. So we need this guidance of the acharyas to properly understand. Guru is absolutely essential. Yasya deve para bhaktir yata deve tata guru. You see, the Shvetashvatara Upanishad is saying that only unto those who have unflinching faith in the words of the spiritual master and the words of Krishna, only to them are the imports of Vedic knowledge revealed. So we require the purports of this great realized spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to actually understand what is the true meaning when it says here, Amara, deathless. Because actually they're not deathless. It's just relatively speaking, they appear to be deathless from our perspective. But actually in their position, they're just as subject to death as we are. They're 10 million years, which each year being, much greater than ours, their one day is six, their 12 hours is 6 months of our time. Their 24 hours is 12 months of our time. So if you figure out how many, you could do a mathematical calculation to see how long their 10 million years is according to our, years. It's a very long time. Would be 360 times 10 million. So what is that? Is it 3 billion? Something like that. 3,600,000,000 years. So it's an incredibly long lifespan. But actually time is relative. They experience their 10 million years just like as we experience our 100 years. There's actually an example of that in the Bhagavatam. One king, I believe he was wanting to get a husband for his daughter. So he went to Brahma, to Brahma's planet. Very powerful king. He was able to go to Brahma Loka, bring his daughter with him. So there was some concert going on. Not like we have here, but you know, Veena, Tampura. Not like an electric guitar, that kind of concert. But there was a, you know, real Vedic concert going on. So he was waiting and to have his audience with Brahma while he was enjoying the concert. And so finally, when it was all over, he was asking for some arrangement for his daughter. And the Brahma said that, you know, anyone that you would have married her to, they're many generations have passed and they're all dead and gone. Because time on Brahma Loka is different. Every moment on Brahma Loka is many, many years on this earthly plane. So he actually entered in a different time relativity when he entered Brahma Loka. And practically he was an unknown king going back to the earthly plane after a few minutes in Brahma Loka. He wouldn't even be known anymore. He'd been lost in the history books. It would have been so long since he was known. So this is the relativity of time. You see. Time is a relative thing. So this, when you come to the platform of pure bhakti, you actually enter into pure timelessness, totally beyond the dimensions of time and space. In the spiritual world, actually, all the pastimes are going on simultaneously. There's no time restrictions like we have here. This is confirmed in the Vrindavan Mahimamrita by Prabhupada Sarasvati. He was having realizations of seeing Krishna's Leela. He was a fully realized follower of Lord Chaitanya living in Vrindavan 500 years ago. And he could see simultaneously, just like we have here in America, three-ring circus. Barnum and Bailey, and three ring circus, where there's three things happening at once. You got the tigers here doing their thing, the elephant here doing his thing, and the trapeze artist here doing his thing. And you can watch all three things happening at once. You know, just check them out all at once. So there was Prabhupada Sarasvati was seeing that Krishna was doing all these different leelas simultaneously. Here Krishna was doing one thing. Here Krishna was doing another thing. Here Krishna was doing another thing. And of course also in Dwarka, Krishna was having 16,108 different leelas every night when he went home from the court. He went to each queen's palace. So these leelas are going on. They're not bound by time. That, you know, he has to have one leela and then another leela and another leela. They are completely beyond any kind of time constriction. So Krishna is able to reciprocate with each and every devotee in a very personal and intimate way, which is not at all restricted by any time or place considerations in the spiritual world. So this gives us some idea here, reading these descriptions of Prabhupada, to help us understand what Amara means in relationship to the demigods. And another point is that how powerful was Maharaj Pariksit? Even though he was an earthly king, he was so powerful that he could chastise the denizens of heaven and bring them under his power. Formerly that was the case. The earthly kings actually could rule the whole universe, or to speak of the whole planet, you see. Formerly the Vedic culture, the kings could rule over the entire universe. That was the former. And then gradually it shrunk down to one planet, and then gradually, you know, now there's not any real kings left, just a few shadow kings, so-called kings. We also see that Maharaj Katvanga was such a powerful king. That he could go to the heavenly planets and fight the demigods, I mean the demons who were attacking the demigods. Actually, he was successful. The demigods were being harassed by the demons who were trying to overtake the heavenly planets. And in great desperation, actually, the demigods begged Maharaj Katvanga to come and help take charge of the fight against the demons. And Maharaj Kadvanga was indeed, he fought very valiantly for many, many long years. And he was successful in defeating the demons, actually. The demigods were so grateful, they said, "What can we give you?" He said, "Just tell me when I will die." He said, "Oh, you, with their power of seeing past, present, and future," the demigods said, "You will die in a minute." "Oh, thank you very much. Now I take complete shelter of Krishna." And he became a pure devotee within a minute. So these great Vedic kings, they had such power. Where do we see such power today? In the heads of state. There's no such power. Why? Because they become, because of their absorption in the material energy. The more that one becomes Krishna conscious, they become powerful, actually. That's the thing. A devotee is not interested in power. But the fact is, actually there's a Hindi saying that one who conquers his mind can conquer the world. But of course we know from the Bhagavad Gita how difficult it is to conquer that mind. I mean, it's a raging wind, it's a tornado. You see, it's a raging whirlwind, that mind. So to the degree that we can actually conquer our mind, we become very powerful, influential, potent influencers on those things that are going on around us. To the extent of Maharaj Pariksit, a pure devotee, he could even the heavenly Devanzans who control the material nature, who control the sun, the moon, who control even your bowel movements, control the blinking of the eyelids. These denizens of heaven were actually under the control of the earthly king. You see? So just see how much power he had. The universal controllers were under his power. He could chastise them if they deviated from Dharma. He could bring them under his punishment. So what is Prabhupada drawing? What is the conclusion that Prabhupada is drawing here? Prabhupada always brings it down to some practical conclusion. Not just some interesting philosophy. Prabhupada brings things down to practical, concrete reality, not just something up in the air. This means that the state executive head must be as strong as Maharaj Pariksit. So powerful leaders are actually required in the world, because there will always be roguish elements. They will always be rogues. So powerful leaders are required. That's a fact. So as we were describing yesterday, this is one of the items on our agenda. First and foremost, we want to create a class of very powerful Brahmins. It means they are powerful in controlling their senses. They are powerful in presenting the science of Krishna to the people in general. Prabhupada actually explains that Brahman means he is the spiritual master of the human society. How many second initiated devotees do we have here? How many Brahmins? Let's see a show of hands. Second initiated. You see? Brahman is supposed to be the spiritual master of the human society, Prabhupada explains. Those who are second initiated are supposed to be so regulated, so sense controlled, they can go to any country in the world and teach and train the executive head of that country how to rule his country in a Krishna conscious way. A Brahman means he's an advisor to the executive head. It's like we see one powerful Brahman, a famous Brahman actually, that Chanakya Pandit. Alexander the Great was conquering the world and he was coming to India to conquer India. And there was one Indian king, Chandragupta Maharaj. This Chandragupta had the good fortune of having his prime minister, his brahminical advisor, as Chanakya Pandit. Chanakya Pandit was he was a real Brahmin. He wasn't one of these two pious Brahmins, just putting one thread. But he, even though he could have all opulence, he lived outside of the king's palace in a simple hut. But he gave such good advice to Chandragupta that Chandragupta was able to defeat the onward march of Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great couldn't conquer India because of Chanakya Pandit, actually. Is it? Chanakya Pandit defeated Alexander by his brilliance, his brahminical intelligence. He was able to defeat him. See, a Brahmin can teach, just like Dronacharya is actually a Brahmin. A Brahmin is actually expert in, a true Brahmin can teach any subject matter. Brahmin means he's a teacher. He can teach military art, he can teach political science, he can teach cooking, he can teach cleaning, he can teach deity worship. This is described, actually. A Brahmin is expert in the art of teaching. That is his expertise. And of course, his ultimate teaching is to surrender to Krishna. That is his ultimate teaching. And he can engage the different members of the society in such a way that they can take their particular talent, their particular position in the society, and they can purify themselves by using that particular talent, that particular position in the service of Krishna. As Prabhupada told us in Atlanta, if you're a doctor, remain a doctor. If you're a lawyer, remain a doctor. If you're a fool, remain a fool. He didn't mean remain a fool, but he meant that you should keep yourself humble. Alright, I'm a fool, now let me learn. Since I am a fool, let me take shelter of the bona fide spiritual master and learn how not to be a fool. Not to think that I'm a great person. That is the meaning. To remain a fool. It means consider yourself a fool. Doesn't mean you act like, continue acting like a fool. You should always consider that I'm a fool before my spiritual master. And may I then therefore take shelter of him so he can guide me and train me how to become actually an enlightened being that I meant to be, spiritually enlightened being, Krishna conscious person. So then Prabhupada concludes his beautiful purport by saying that the principle of the executive head is that the offender is always to be punished. Well, nowadays, the state executive heads themselves are offenders. So how they can actually do their job, they cannot. So we have to actually bring in a new rulers to this planet. Actually, at one point, Prabhupada actually approved and authorized and guided us to start our own political party. Do you know that? We had an ISKCON had its own political party called In God We Trust. And Prabhupada had different disciples running for political office. And we were going out and campaigning. In Gainesville, I remember, we were campaigning. Our temple president was running for the city council. And we campaigned for him. And he got some votes, too. He garnered some votes. And then he would go to all the candidates would gather together. And, you know, he held a press conference and all the media came. But he gave his platform to have fruit trees on the side of the highway so everybody can have food to eat. It was one of his items on his agenda, I remember. And then they had a debate of all the candidates, and he on the campus at University of Florida, and Amarendra Prabhu went there, and he debated with all the other candidates why he should be elected. And many votes, people actually voted for him. They appreciated, even though they weren't devotees, they appreciated, yes, these Hare Krishnas, they should lead, actually. So we got many votes, actually. It was very encouraging. But then, actually, it's a little legal for a church to do that. So Prabhupada had to stop it, because you lose your status as a church if you have a political party. So Prabhupada stopped it. But that doesn't mean that individual devotees who are inclined cannot run for office and try to take political posts. There's nothing that, and so if some devotee feels that that's his, you know, the occupation that he has in his blood, he really wants to do that, then we encourage him, yes, do that. Be pure and enter the political arena for Krishna. So that, because eventually that's what we want. Eventually we want to have a whole, as Bhakti Siddhanta said, when the high court judges wear tilak, then we are successful. So we want that day will come when the executive heads will actually be themselves pure devotees of Krishna. And those who deviate from Krishna will be punished by the state, actually. Oh, you're selling meat. Oh, you must be punished. You're eating meat. You must be punished. If you want to eat meat, you'll have to sacrifice a goat in a dark moon night. There's Vedic injunction for meat eater. You have to wait until the dark moon night, and then you kill the goat, whispering a mantra in the goat's ear that now I am killing you, and in the future, next lifetime, you will kill me and eat me. That's what you have to do to eat meat, according to the Vedic codes. For any intelligent person realize, what am I doing? I'm going to become a goat? And this goat's going to become a human being and eat meat? The whole idea is, if you want to eat meat, here's how you have to do it. So anybody who has any brain will realize, wait a minute, I shouldn't eat meat at all. Forget it. You see? So this day, we want to see when Bhagavad Dharma again becomes the world culture. And Krishna consciousness again becomes the world religion. That day we want to see. When Prabhupada said it should be the principle that the state executive head does this, Prabhupada is saying the leaders of the world should be Krishna conscious. That's Prabhupada's desire. Prabhupada desires. Now, what is our philosophy? Does Krishna fulfill the desires of his pure devotee? Yes. You may say, it's how is it ever could be possible that the executive heads can be Vaishnavas wearing tilak? That, you know, the president of the United States is out in the White House lawn on his morning japa walk after offering arti to Radha and Krishna in the White House. Going out on the White House grounds, chanting his japa in the early morning, getting ready for the day's business, you see. Does it seem like an impossible dream? It does, doesn't it? Considering the world situation. But when Prabhupada is saying the state executive head should be doing this, Prabhupada has a desire that the leaders should, Bhakti Siddhanta, they both have this desire that the leaders should, of the world should be Krishna conscious. And the fact is that Krishna does fulfill the desires of his pure devotees. So we have a great cause to be optimistic when we push forward this movement, that we can expect miracles to happen. But as I mentioned yesterday, Prabhupada told Tamal Krishna Maharaj, Krishna can give you America within a minute, but what you will do with it, you see. If all the leaders were coming to us wanting to be guided how to run their countries, that's a very powerful, influential position that we would have as Brahmins. Are we pure enough to handle it without falling down? Actually, this is the reality. We're not pure enough to be that powerful and influential on this planet right now. The material perks that would come along with that much power and influence, we're not pure enough to handle them. If thousands and millions of people were coming to your feet and bowing down and saying, I surrender unto you, beautiful women, rich men, bowing down at your feet. We see even in our ISKCON, some of our gurus had some degree of opulence of money and women, and they couldn't handle it, and they fell down. So this is why I'm always emphasizing pure devotional service. Pure devotional service. We have to really strive to be pure devotees. Not just a show of pure devotion, but actually develop pure devotion within our hearts. Because then and only then will Krishna would be able to fulfill the desire of Prabhupada that the state executive head should be a devotee of Krishna. We have to ourselves become pure. It's of the utmost importance. And this will put an end to the... If we can stop being our... It's interesting here, an upstart living being who emits offenses. Does that apply to us in one sense? Upstarts who commit offenses? Are any of us free from offenses? Is anybody here free from committing any offense? I know I'm the worst offender. I'm even an offender by thinking I'm the most. You know what Prabhupada said, one devotee probably said, Prabhupada, I'm the most fallen. You know what he said? He said, you're not the most anything, you're simply insignificant. So we may think, oh yes, I'm the most offensive person, but actually that is an offense also. I'm thinking most. I'm the most. That's another pride. Yes, I am the most offensive. We're not the most anything, we're just insignificant, Prabhupada said. So we have to see that that upstart living being that Maharaj Parikshit is prepared to punish. We are in that category still. We ourselves are upstart, offensive living creatures. So we have to get over it. We have to take complete shelter of Guru and Krishna. So we can become free of this upstart, offensive mentality. So that we can do our share to bring in this new era of Bhagavad Dharma on this planet. That we can become pure and go back to Godhead, and we can do our duty to see that Papa's desire that there's the executive head should be Krishna conscious, that can actually happen on this planet. We want to please Papa, don't we? Isn't that what we're all about? We're doing this all to please Srila Prabhupada, isn't it? So therefore, for Prabhupada's pleasure, we have to become pure devotees. We have to do that for our individual well-being and for the well-being of all on this planet. Today is Nishinga Chaturdasi. And we sing every day in the morning, but here in the Singo, Hridayena Singo. Prabhupada has explained the meaning. Bihirna Singha, Hridayena Singha. That means, may Lord, that I've been explaining many times this point because it's a very important point. But he's explaining that, may Lord Nisingadev dwell within my heart, killing all of my bad propensities, so that my mind may become clean, I can peacefully worship the Lord and bring peace to the entire world. This is the mood of this prayer. The devotee is begging that he can become pure and he can spread purity everywhere for the benefit of the whole planet. So this is the mood that we should be in. That let me become pure so that I can become an instrument in the hands of Guru and Krishna for helping all others to become happy and fixed in pure Krishna bhakti. So, are there any questions?
I want to know, you was giving an example about Krishna jail.
Say that again.
You was giving an example about prisoners, people who is punished.
People who
sent to jail.
Yeah.
Prison. So I know that.
In like capital punishment, murderers.
We have a program in ISKCON for the prisoners, and I know that we have some. The devotees inside jail are chanting Hare Krishna. I'm reading Prabhupada books, and you know something about that?
Yeah, there's inmates. There are persons who have gone to prison and are reading Prabhupada's books and chanting. That's a fact.
Yeah, my question is if you know something about that problem, about the devotees who live inside jail. They're chanting the 16 rounds of following the principles, and they read the books, and
yes, that is our program. Krishna appeared in a prison also. And we are all prisoners also. You're a prisoner.
Well, no, I'm not talking about both.
Your material body is a prison itself.
I know all these analogies, but I'm talking about the prisoners of this
state. That you can consult with. There is one devotee whose name is Chandrasekhar Prabhu. He is taking that suit. You can consult with him. He is the expert.
Because you are saying that inside jail they teach you how to become more criminal, and I think that not at all. Some people get relieved. I mean, we are prisoners in this material world inside jail, because Prabhupada gave an analogy about we're in the material world like a prisoners, right? And then Prabhupada gave an analogy in jail, the person who is in jail is supposed to be in jail because of his sinful activities.
Right.
So he's supposed to be relieved and recovered, and then to be a good citizen, right?
The jail system is supposed to reform them and bring them out as good citizens, but it doesn't do that.
I know that there is mafia inside the jail. So there is mafia. There are sinful activities also. They're running on prostitution and drugs inside jail.
Oh yeah, drug trafficking inside the jail. That's right.
But there is a reformatory also.
Huh?
There is a reformatory. They get help to be a good citizen.
Well, the actual help is if they can be made Krishna conscious.
No, I understand that. But the analogy that was given is not about that everybody is supposed to be in jail to be a criminal.
Hmm?
That's
right. Yes, sometimes they come out and they become devotees. There's one lady in New Orleans who was in prison.
Well, we have devotees.
She came out as one devotee. Sometimes also that we have experience that we preach to them and they become attracted to Krishna consciousness and they come to the temple and then they steal from the temple also. That happens because their nature is to be a thief.
No, that many things have to be different.
They chant Hare Krishna but then they come to the temple and they steal from the temple also because it's just their nature. That's how they earn a living.
Yeah.
Think, well, I got to cover my maintenance so I'll just steal from the temple or I bloop. Yes.
When you were explaining your class, which was very nice, and sometimes it is seen that, I don't know if this, because the leaders are also criminals and offenders themselves, that they are putting persons in jails who are offenseless. They're putting the persons in jail.
Because the leaders are?
Offenders.
Yes. They are criminals.
They are criminals.
That's
also.
Right.
So now it is found that they are putting offenseless persons in the jail system.
They put offenseless persons in the jail. That can also be. If they feel that some sadhu is going to be politically detrimental for their position, and they have no trouble putting a sadhu in jail also. If they feel that the sadhu is just like what happened with those Muslim leaders and Haridas Thakur, they wanted to bring him down. He was being worshipped as a great sadhu. So they wanted to spoil that. So yes, the sadhus are sometimes like Lord Jesus Christ, you see. Or Haridas Thakur, when they beat him in 22 marketplaces. They find the sadhus to be be a threat to their agenda, their demoniac agenda sometimes. And they will harass the sadhus because of that. But we are protected by Krishna. Mare Krishna Rake Ke, Rake Krishna Mare Ke. Krishna wants to protect, no one can kill. If Krishna wants to kill, no one can protect. So we're protected by the Supreme Protection Agency, Krishna. We have nothing to fear. We can just go forward with our program to spread Krishna consciousness and revolutionize this planet. And we understand that we're fully... Of course, we should be intelligent how we do it. Not to get thrown in prison. But our program is to bring a spiritual cultural revolution to educate everyone to become Krishna conscious, to use all their talents and all their abilities and all their opulence in the service of the Lord. That is our program. Any other questions? Yes.
You mentioned that the devotees must be leaders.
Devotee?
Must be. That Srila Prabhupada was expecting. Dira? The devotees should lead the world.
Lead, yes. That's right.
So my question is how can we be more relevant to our daily society?
How can we.
Relevant in teaching Krishna consciousness to outsiders?
What is he saying?
How can we preach relevant to today's society?
How to preach
relevant to today's society?
Today's society, yes. Well, today's society is a very general term. You really have to bring it down to the individual person. within today's society. If you see how Prabhupada preached in the today's society of 60 years ago, or 35 years ago, he preached in different ways to different people. He was speaking to one man of color, an Afro-American man, who was a state representative in Michigan, in Detroit Temple. And he said, yes, our Krishna, he is from your community. Because Krishna is black. So that's an example, you see. Yes, our Krishna is from your community, you see. We're worshipping a black god. So this is Prabhupada's expertise. He knew how to make a heart-to-heart connection with the person he was speaking to. Yeah, we're worshipping black god. Black man is our god, you see. So in this way, Prabhupada knew how, and he didn't say that to everyone. This is a man of color, an Afro-American gentleman, who was a powerful politician, actually, in the state. So Prabhupada, he knew how to adjust the message according to the particular person. So when you say today's society, that's too general of a term, really. You have to see down who is the specific person I'm speaking to. What is his mentality? And then you have to become expert to understand the nature of a man or a person you're speaking to. And then you have to speak according to them, just what they need to hear to connect them with Krishna. That's what you have to do. Hare Krishna. Any other questions? All right then. So we thank you all very much for your wonderful attention. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Antaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Hare Krishna.